soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They've hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be.
A working class hero is something to be, indeed. I'd rather be a working class hero than be one of those folks that run this place. The ones that think it's not just okay to lie, cheat, steal, kill, but that it's a goal we should all have too, just like them. Well, I don't think that stuff's right. That's not part of my new American dream. There's a new pope. He hails from Argentina. He's supposed to be a champion of the common people, working class hero. I kind of doubt it. The New Yorker says it's a cautiously bold move, or perhaps a boldly cautious move. And choosing the Argentine Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio, the cardinals of the Catholic Church are trying to indicate that they are open and listening to calls for change, while hewing carefully to their traditions and the conservative doctrine of the past two popes. We will see in the coming months whether to put the accent on caution or boldness. The New Yorker article goes on, the choice of Cardinal Bergoglio does mark a series of firsts. The first non-European pope in modern times. There were Middle Eastern and North African popes in the first several hundred years of the church. The first Latin American pope. The first Jesuit pope. Interesting, since the Jesuit order has been viewed with some suspicion in Vatican circles as excessively liberal and intellectual. The first pope to take the name of Francis, in homage to St. Francis of Assisi, whose life of poverty and attention to the poor was a radical challenge to the monarchic papacy of his time. Bergoglio made a point of wearing simple vestments, even as he greeted the crowd in St. Peter's Square. Rare among modern popes, he's not served any time in one of the offices of the Vatican bureaucracy in Rome. Instead, he made some sharp remarks about the vanity, self-infatuation, careerism, and pursuit of promotions in the Roman Curia. As Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he apparently preferred to be called Father Jorge, and was known for his preoccupation with the city's poorest, reportedly washing and kissing the feet of patients suffering from AIDS. Wow. I mean, this guy sounds great, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's from South America instead of Rome. Took his name from that really cool dude, St. Francis. He's a Jesuit. They're supposed to be really smart. And he kissed the feet of patients suffering from AIDS. Oh, he must be a champion for the poor and downtrodden, a hope for the gays, an educated man who will lead his church out of ignorance and into enlightenment. Perhaps not. Kevin Annette points out that Bergoglio is accused of helping kidnap opponents of Argentina's military junta during the 1970s Dirty War, and also of baby trafficking. That's accusations by lawyers and members of the Plaza de Mayo human rights group. And that also tells us that the Jesuit order established the murderous Indian residential school system in North America during the mid-19th century and has led to destruction and killing of millions of non-Catholics around the world since its inception in the mid-16th century. Oh, and about that idea that this Pope will be an icon of Pope for gays, well, the National Catholic Register reportedly described Bergoglio as an unwaveringly orthodox on matters of sexual morality, staunchly opposing abortion, same-sex marriage, and contraception. They said that in 2010, he asserted that gay adoption is a form of discrimination against children, which assertion earned a public rebuke from Argentina's president, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner. So, there are extreme views of this man. As usual in such cases, the truth is likely to be found somewhere in between. We shall watch and see. One very real question is how much difference the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church really makes in today's world. I'm sure Francis intends to make a difference, and I pray that he will indeed make a good difference, have a positive impact on the world. Making a difference is what we want to do here at the New American Dream Radio Show. We find and interview guests, we tell you what we think, and we tell you what we know. And we hope you will go out into your communities and make a difference. Tell people you're helping them because you're part of the New American Dream. And tell us about it so we can tell the world. Thanks for listening. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and it's time to hear from my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome special guests Richard Flamer and Jim Fetzer. So tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Chiapas, Mexico, Madison, Wisconsin, and wherever you are. Okay, then. At a time when Americans stand for anthems and planes flying over the stadium to salute the fake killing of Osama bin Laden, the fake elections, the fake TV news, the fake lone gunman shootings, the spending of half of our tax dollars on the military, and the killing and imprisonment of anyone it takes in order for us to feel secure in our basements, watching TV in the dark and eating Doritos, at a time like this, well, just to say that Sophie Scholl, the White Rose, would be proud. At such a debased point in American history, the Transform Now plowshares actually exist. They are real. And they have a May 7th court date and face years and years in American federal prison. They are Michael Wally, Megan Rice, and Greg Borchi Obed. They succeeded in a disarmament action at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee nuclear facility before dawn on July 28, 2012. They hammered on the cornerstone of the newly built, highly enriched uranium manufacturing facility, splashed human blood, and left four spray-painted tags on the recent construction, which read, "Woe to the Empire of Blood. The fruit of justice is peace. Work for peace, not for war. And plowshares, please. Isaiah." Under the cover of darkness, they intermittently pass beyond four fences in a walk for over 2 hours through the fatal forest zone. We feel it was a miracle. We were led directly to where we wanted to go, said Greg. After navigating through the complex, they came to a long, white, windowless building marked HEUMF. It was built like a fortress, Greg said, describing the four guard towers. Unimpeded by security, they attached two banners to pillars of the building. Transform Now Plowshares, read the first, with a green and black icon showing part bomb, part flower. A second stated, swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks, Isaiah. In addition, between the pillars, they strung red crime tape. We're still opposing the filthy, rotten system, Michael said. Jesus has no nukes in heaven and no torture in heaven. Okay. Well, the signs of revolution, the revolution will not be televised. Is this the revolution? From where will it come, if it comes? The Plowshares action in Tennessee, perhaps? Maybe a great letter to the editor. A recent article says that violence has increased and has risen in Chicago due to increased poverty. Maybe that is where the revolution will begin. Maybe it has already begun. 100,000 marched down the street in Washington, D.C. Some old guy refuses to stand for the national anthem at a Red Sox-Yankees game. A lone man drags his grandfather's hunting rifle to the mountains of Idaho. My guess is that it probably comes from poverty and necessity and maybe some reading, learning. But where would their learning come from? Corporate TV? Probably the internet. Some spark, some fire that just happens. That was not quite planned, but just seemed to work just right. Or probably it never happens. Well, not until it would be cut very bad and very evident. Lots of us are advocating investigation into U.S. history. I think that's pretty important. There's a lot to think about and do. Here's an editorial comment of mine on the Second Amendment, Deer Hunters and the Plowshares Movement. The Second Amendment, deer hunters say, the government can't take away our guns because we will fight, and so they need assault weapons for when that big day comes. But actually, for 30-plus years, this has already taken place for a generation by Americans nonviolently revolt, fighting against U.S. militarism, and spending our resources on weapons of mass destruction rather than schools, healthcare, children, families, jobs, homes, all the good stuff, because there is no money left over from our spending on bad stuff, the military and its weapons. Shock and awe. These Plowshares Movement folks gathered a few years ago to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the first Plowshares at the General Electric plant at King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, when 8 people sneaked in and pounded on cruise missile parts with hammers and were arrested and served time. And since then, there have been dozens and dozens of like protests around the world. But we hear nothing about them because our media is like Tass and Izvestia. And we do not live in a democracy. We have a rich history, but it is only covered in samizdat, only to be found by chasing after a loose piece of paper in the parking lot of Walmart or on the back of a liquor store receipt in Pine Ridge or on the cardboard sign of a homeless woman in Seattle. The truth is out there. It is here. It exists. But the information is not to be found in your local paper, on your local on your television or on your radio. It's just not. And yet it does exist. To find the truth about America, don't listen to regular radio or watch TV or read what you feel you are expected to read. That's never going to work. Don't watch the news on TV or read Time and Newsweek every week. Read the full New York Times every day. That's never going to work. I did find this. I think it was a crisp wisp of paper that escaped the burning barrel, or maybe it was on old Christmas wrapping paper. It appeared on the internet on Christmas Eve. I think there was a star above it and 3 guys in black suits and sunglasses riding donkeys following it from a distance so as not to be seen. December 24th, 2012, 9:32 a.m. The writer says, I don't believe that Abraham Lincoln gave a damn about black people and their status. Nor do I believe that he did not deliberately provoke the Confederate attack on Fort Sumter. I don't believe that the Spanish blew up the USS Maine in Havana Harbor. I don't believe that the Lusitania was not carrying munitions intended to kill Germans. I don't believe that warmonger and consummate moral slug Woodrow Wilson involved the U.S. in World War I to make the world safe for democracy. I don't believe that the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor was a surprise, nor do I believe that it was unprovoked. I don't believe that Hitler exterminated 6 million Jews in gas chambers. I don't believe that Harry Truman dropped atomic bombs on defenseless Japanese civilians as a military necessity to save American lives. I don't believe that General George Patton died from injuries received in a car accident. I don't believe that the government of Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala was any kind of communist threat to the U.S. I don't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald assassinated President John F. Kennedy. I don't believe that the Vietnamese attacked USS Maddox in the Gulf of Tonkin in 1964. I don't believe that the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty in 67 was an accident. I don't believe that James Earl Ray assassinated Martin Luther King. I don't believe that Sirhan Sirhan assassinated Robert F. Kennedy. I don't believe that Saddam Hussein was not deliberately provoked into invading Kuwait. I don't believe that Clinton wanted a peaceful solution with the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia over the Kosovo incident. I don't believe that TWA Flight 800 exploded in midair because of a spark in a fuel tank. I don't believe Saddam Hussein tried to buy yellow cake uranium oxide from Niger. I don't believe that Hussein had reconstituted any WMD programs when Dick Cheney said he did. I don't believe anything that Colin Powell said about Iraq in his speech to the UN. I don't believe that Arabs attacked the U.S. on 9/11/2001. In part because the U.S. government has never produced any evidence in support of its story. I don't believe that bin Laden would pull off such a daring and successful attack and then deny it. Therefore, I don't think Osama bin Laden had anything to do with it. I don't believe that the three towers collapsed due to fire. I don't believe that Bruce Ivins was the anthrax killer. I don't believe that any of the numerous post-9/11 U.S. wars of aggression against any Arab Islamic countries have any justifiable moral or practical purpose. I don't believe that Pat Tillman was killed by friendly fire any more than I believe that General George Patton died from injuries due to a car accident. I don't believe Obama has a legitimate U.S. birth certificate because if he did, he would produce it. Thus, I don't believe he is even a legal U.S. citizen. I don't believe that Obama wanted to repudiate the Second Amendment and disarm the U.S. citizenry because they care about the children. Because if that were true, they wouldn't be senselessly murdering children in faraway places like Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen on an almost daily basis, nor would they be arming and supporting a bloodthirsty, illegitimate rogue state Israel, which brutally and routinely kills defenseless Arab children, apparently for sporting purposes. In summary, I don't believe anything the U.S. government, its owners, agents, neighbors, apologists, and court historians say about anything of any significance. And all this came from the lowly comments section of an alternative website. Well, there is a place like no place on earth, a land full of wonder, mystery, and danger. Some say to survive it, you need to be as mad as a hatter. If you come to understand this mad place, the others will tell you that you are entirely bonkers. But I'll tell you the secret. All the best people are. Back to you, Chuck.
This message brought to you by the Foundation for a New American Dream. We go to the moon? Maybe. Maybe not. But just like Voldemort and so many discussions that are prohibited in America, it's one that cannot be named. Was 9/11 an inside job? Stop! See? Like that. Can't talk about that. Was Paul Wellstone assassinated? A roll of the eyes. You're sent to Siberia by your brother, your mother, and your cousin. Separated from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Poof! No one can now see you or talk to you. You're a non-person. Might as well go smoke in the garage. Did FDR provoke Pearl Harbor in order to get into World War II? Did the government burn men, women, and children alive at Waco? Was the government involved in the Oklahoma City bombing? Are so-called terror plots and mass murders, such as in Aurora, Colorado, Newtown, Connecticut, and dozens of other terrorist events, actually engineered by the FBI and CIA, NSA, in order to bring about a zeitgeist of fear and scare Americans into accepting a police state? What are chemtrails? What does the government know about UFOs? Why does Sirhan not remember anything about the Robert F. Kennedy shooting? Who shot Martin Luther King? James Earl Ray said he did not do it. Evidence says the FBI and others did it. Do these questions have merit? Are they preposterous? We'll never know. Because Brian Williams and NBC and Amy Goodman and NPR are afraid of even the question. Why? 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 Did Bush steal the elections of 2000-2004? Ask these questions on any mainstream or so-called liberal website or TV show or newspaper, radio show, you'll get laughed down. Ask it on the so-called liberal progressive Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, and they will try to humiliate you. Why? Is it because you're truly so hilariously pathetic? Or is it because they are so, so afraid? The foundation for a new American dream. Because it's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire.
There's no quitting in popery. You can't resign the papacy. You can't stop being God's holy representative on earth. If you go work at Walmart in the way, way in the back in the automotive tire cleaner supply corner, you are still God's holy representative on earth. Dude, you must sit in the Sistine Chapel and sweat your ass off like it was the sauna at the downtown Y. You gut it out. You die with your cold hands on your big staff. The Bishop of Rome does not walk away into the sunset. He rides his bulletproof pontiff mobile right into the fire. He gets taken up in a burning bush to that big golden Vatican in the sky by Alan the alien, just like... Oh, wait. Dateline Vatican City, there is white smoke over the quiet little town. Looks like we have a winner. Everyone look at the numbers on your tickets. There is a new pope. Pope George. Pope George Carlin of Corpus Christi Elementary in Manhattan and Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx. Pope Carlin I of the Bronx is about to give his first address to the people. Let's listen in. I want you to know when it comes to believing in God, I really tried. I really, really tried. I tried to believe that there is a God who created each one of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. I really tried to believe that. But I got to tell you, the longer you live, the more you look around, the more you realize something is fucked up. Something is wrong here. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the ice capades. Something is definitely wrong. This is not good work. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong on the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. And just between you and me and any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago. Now, let us pray. Dominus fucking vobiscum, tecum spiritu tuo. Dateline Vatican City has been sponsored tonight by the good folks at Pope on a Rope Soap and Pink Pope Smoke for the special Sisters of St. Francis in your life. Occupy Dealey Plaza, that's where it all began. November 22nd, 1963, about 12:30 p.m. 50 years ago, this year on November 22nd, 2013, fill Dealey Plaza with protesters and signs and singing and speaking, and let them bring their dogs and their cops and their robbers and murderers and their sniper rifles and double-secret video cameras and microphones. Occupy Dealey Plaza. I demand a truth commission to replace the Warren Commission and the 9/11 Commission. We want freedom. We want peace. We want real hope and real change. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let them know we know what they have done. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let the world know this is America.
Our first guest tonight, Richard Flamer, lives and works at the Chiapas, Mexico Catholic Worker. He's a Vietnam vet, spent 12 years in the 80s and 90s as a photojournalist in Central America working.
Hello.
Hello, Richard.
Hi, Chuck. How are you?
I'm fine. You're on the air.
Oh, great.
What do you have for us tonight, Richard?
Well, I just finished my supper.
Okay.
And I was eating Chinese food, which caused me to think about immigration, which isn't really a stretch. I'm in southern Mexico amongst Indians and Mexican Indians and Mexicans in general. The indigenous culture here, where we, in our state of Chiapas, there are 14 separate languages spoken.
Wow.
And it got me to thinking about lychee trees, because I'm working with a group up near Simihovel in growing lychee trees. And it's a project, a development project, started by a German family who fled, the project has continued, and they are now producing enough lychee nuts in this one cooperative so that Mexico doesn't have to import lychees from anywhere in the world. They have them all for their Chinese community, which incidentally happens to be pretty large. As a brief history, during the gold rush, the California gold rush, the U.S. had quotas on Chinese coming into the country. And the ships would come from China filled with Chinese laborers. And they would, once the quota was hit, then they'd turn the ships away from San Francisco. And they would head south, and many came to Mexico, and then Mexico sort of shut their doors. But Honduras at the time was trying to clear out their swamps. And so they took in all the Chinese they could get to clear their swamps. These days, almost half the population in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, the capital, is ethnic Chinese. And that phenomenon isn't unique to the Chinese, but in fact the same quota system worked with the Irish in Boston and New York, with the result that there are great colonies of former Irish in Veracruz, Mexico, and farther south in present day Ecuador and Venezuela. What I'm getting at is that all of Latin America are nations of immigrants, all of them. They've made substantial contributions. And this issue of immigration hasn't gone away with time. Back in the 1960s, with the civil war in Beirut, where the Christian Lebanese were fighting the Islamic Lebanese, many of the rich left Lebanon and came to Mexico and Colombia. Colombia is known for the pop singer Shakira, whose parents, or whose father is Lebanese, came during that time. Carlos Slim, the richest man in the world, is here in Mexico, and he came from Lebanon. Selma Hayek, the actress, her parents were from Lebanon and came to Veracruz. The nature of immigration is such that I don't understand why, if people have no place in their homeland, why they can't go other places. It's perfectly, under the capitalist system, it's perfectly all right to export capital out of a country, but why isn't it then all right to export labor as well, and vice versa? The U.S. in particular invites capital from all over the world. Some of the, certainly from England and Israel, Japan. Why, in turn, aren't they inviting labor? Certainly in places like Nebraska, where the crops lie fallow in the fields because they don't have enough pickers. And yet at the same time, they're talking about they're taking away our heritage, they're taking away our jobs. Well, I don't think Mexican or Latin American workers are taking away anybody's jobs. I think they're taking the jobs that nobody else will take. That's sort of how I, as I finished my dinner, I was thinking about all that. And it just so happens that the place that my wife purchased the Chinese food, there it's an ethnic Chinese family that run the place. And the father's very funny. He tells me that he's had to adapt it, the food, to Mexican tastes. So he has chili powder and chilies along with the Chinese food. The second thing I wanted to talk about was the sort of problems. This last 2 weeks, we've been working on trying to get Roberto and Robert, his son. Roberto was a Mexican laborer who was working in Atlanta, Georgia, for a contractor who didn't have a license and didn't have insurance, and was hurt when a piece of equipment fell on him. When he went to file for a disability, he was reported by the contractor and deported out of the country. This kind of thing is not unusual, incidentally. But Roberto managed to get his child, who had been born in the U.S., and the two of them went back to Mexico. Robert, the younger, has had a horrible time here in Mexico. His Spanish wasn't that good to begin with, and then he's now been here 2 years, and he misses the schools, and he misses the life in the U.S. And he has a U.S. passport. Mm. So we worked with Roberto, the father, and Roberto finally said, look, I just can't stand it that my son doesn't have these opportunities that he ought to have, being an American citizen. So he wanted to send them up to the U.S. We found a woman friend of ours who's also a Catholic worker, Emily, who said she'd be glad to have him. She has a son, and her son was born down here in Chiapas. She was willing to take Robert. So we ended up getting a notarized custody form, and the son was going to be traveling with Ryan, another Catholic worker who was going on his way back up to Iowa. And they got to Mexico City, and they, unbeknownst to any of us, Mexico, the country of Mexico, just signed an international agreement on custody and adoption. And the agreement says that the child can't leave without signatures of both parents. Well, The mother is a drug addict living in Atlanta, and nobody knows where she is. She abandoned the family when little Robert was only 8 months old. So now we're sort of stuck in this bureaucracy. So we're trying to think of different things to do. We can. I have a friend over in a nearby town, Chamula, who's a local official, and he said he'd be happy to write up a death certificate for the woman, and then the child would be. That, and we decided that the legality doesn't bother me, but it might prove to have problems later. So we also thought about a second item on our agenda was to try and locate the mother, but that looks pretty hard to do. She's somewhere in the underworld of Atlanta, and it would probably cost a lot of money to get a custody certificate. So we don't know what to do on that end. However, we just discovered today that there is a method of getting a custody certificate from a local judge in a town not far from us. But it's another $200, $500, something like that. And, of course, Roberto, the father, left with nothing, and he's working for $8 a day here.
Wow.
So we end up, we'll have to find the money somehow and put the money together and get him a custody certificate and then see if we can't get his son up to the country. But I've had really almost nightmares about the father, Roberto, who's a very sweet man. He's raised this child from 8 months old, and the child's now 10. And he's willing to give him up so that he could have an education and a life. And I thought, geez, this is what love is about. And, it's a scary thing. So that gives you sort of an indication of what we're doing here. And we try to be a bridge between people and groups and organizations. And the good thing about the Catholic worker movement is that it's all chaotic, and it's all about building communities of faith and resistance. And sometimes resistance to the church as well. But whatever it takes, that's what we're trying to do. So what do you think about all that?
I think that's one of the most incredible stories I have heard in a very long time, Richard, and I thank you so much for sharing it with us. And I think I'm hoping that some of our listeners will want to help out in some way, and can you please tell them how they could send a few bucks to help make something happen?
Well, we're the easiest way is to send a check or a money order to the Chiapas Project, that's C-H-I-A-P-A-S, in care of Holy Family Church, Holy Family Catholic Church. And the address is 1715 Izzard, I as in innocent, Z-A-R-D Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102. And that church acts as our conduit for funds, if you will. And we can access those as after they're deposited because we have an ATM card down here. And that's essentially how we live, is on the generosity of other people. And of course I have a limited Social Security and a small pension from the military for a disability incurred in Vietnam. So that's how we live.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show again, Richard, and I will look forward to hearing from you next month, just during the same week of the month. And I'm going to be sure to include that address when I write up the show, so that I'm hoping that someone will, you know, send you a check. Never any guarantees.
You know, we never worry about the amount. $10 would help.
Mm-hmm.
$20, you know, we don't care.
I understand.
It's really the effort behind it.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for the opportunity to talk, and I'll see you next month, or talk to you next month.
Okay. Well, thank you, Richard, and have a good night.
Thanks, you. Bye.
The New American Dream Radio Show Newsroom has received word that the Homeland Security obscene statue removal team taking part in Operation Bad Guys, after they finished the Joe Paterno job at Penn State, has now taken their bulldozers and cranes and chains and torches, ropes and dynamite on 6 flatbed trucks and 4 semi-trucks with lead pickup with lights flashing, headed for the other jobs that will need to be completed before the end of the coming spring and summer. Right now, the caravan is headed for the Ronald Reagan statue at the National Airport in Arlington, Virginia. Then it's on to the George W. Bush statue at Hamilton High School in Hamilton, Ohio. They will then cruise on down to the George H.W. Bush Monument in Houston, Texas, then out to the Black Hills to the Gerald Ford statue in Rapid City, South Dakota. And here, this just in, plans are underway to take out the Bill Clinton statue in Pristina, Kosovo, and the Barack Obama statue in Jakarta, Indonesia, with drone airplane attacks.
When you go to Walmart, you'll find those birthday cards in the birthday card section that tell all about what was happening during the year you were born. The big political events of 1955, the big songs, movies, celebrities. Well, thanks to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and Walmart, you can also get your FBI file included in your own birthday card. Your card will show you who you had dinner with last Tuesday, where you went for vacation last summer, who you texted last Saturday night, and what movies you ordered last month from Netflix, along with photos who you sat with at McDonald's for coffee this morning. Your FBI file birthday cards from Homeland Security and Walmart. Live better and more transparent with Homeland Security and Walmart. Happy birthday. You're not getting older, you're getting safer. You'll never get tired of this. Will you? We know. We're Walmart and U.S. Department of Homeland Security.
Our second guest is Jim Fetzer. Jim is a former Marine Corps officer. He's published widely on the theoretical foundations of scientific knowledge, computer science, artificial intelligence, cognitive science, and evolution of mentality. He's a McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He's also conducted extensive research into the assassination of JFK, the events of 9/11, and the plane crash that killed Senator Paul Wellstone. He's the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. His latest books include The Evolution of Intelligence, The 9/11 Conspiracy, Render Unto Darwin, and The Place of Probability in Science. We're glad to be able to say that Dr. Jim Fetzer will be joining us each month as a regular columnist. Welcome, Jim, and please take it away.
Mike, Jim isn't on the line yet, but I'm about to call him and see if we can get him.
Okay. Jim used to live here and used to teach at Duluth, as I mentioned. He moved to Madison, I think it was a few years ago, and I think that's where he'll be talking with us tonight. From Madison, Wisconsin. If he answers the phone, one ringy dingy, two ringy dingies.
Hello? This is Jim and Jan. If it's urgent for Jim, try his cell phone, 608-354-4280. Thank you.
Well, it looks like we don't have Jim. Chuck, should we go on?
I'm going to try that cell phone.
That number? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've met Jim Fetzer. Maybe I probably mentioned this before, but I met him once at the September 11th speaking. Speak Fest, the gathering at the Rotunda in the Capitol in St. Paul. And he was there speaking not just with Kevin Barrett, but Kevin Barrett and Jim Fetzer were both there, so I got a chance to meet them and listen to their talks.
I'll have to call you back. I'm taping a show. Did you hear me? I'll call you back.
Was he talking
like
to us or somebody?
I think he's trying to call us or something.
Does he show up on the line?
I don't. He's not showing up in the. Well, I don't know. Shall I try calling him at home one more time?
I don't know what to say about that. How does it work?
Should we wait till he calls in?
I don't know what to say. I'm just going to go on with number 10 here.
Yeah, let's do that.
Now, stay tuned for the continuing adventures of Troy the Town Cop. Troy was sitting in the cruiser brushing donut hole dust off his new blue pants. He was over on the side street over by the ball field listening to the high school Saturday afternoon basketball report on the local radio station when he got a call. Something about an explosion over by the church on Elm Street. Troy turned on the siren and the lights, and it wasn't long before he could see the smoke. Lots and lots of smoke. Black smoke rising straight up. There were cars burning in the parking lot and a big hole in the church roof where the smoke and fire danced. Troy ran inside, beginning his full day of helping to save the living, cover the dead, and comfort the dying, amid the brick and steel and wood church rubble. The wedding was canceled as the bride and groom and most of the wedding party were among the casualties. The guests eventually went home walking, limping, or hobbling along in vehicles with flat tires and blown-out windows. It was Troy who discovered the remains of one of the rockets. Some said it had come from a silent, pilotless aircraft above our town. Troy rubbed away the blood and dirt to find an inscription on the spent bomb. Greetings from the USA and Barack Obama. When Troy finally got home, he was too tired to shower. He yanked a beer from the fridge and snatched the bowl of stale chips off the counter and stumbled into the living room. He felt in the dark for the clicker and turned on the news right in time for coverage of the whole church thing, and there he was, hurrying around, jumping over a little broken stone wall. He pointed the beer can at the TV and sort of smiled as he kicked off his boots at the same time. The TV announcers explained for their listeners that the members of the wedding party had been terrorists, a sleeper, hidden cell. The bride and groom had been known to do anti-American terroristic things. One of them was the number two person in the organization. This will deeply inhibit their ability to operate for quite some time, said the TV announcer. Troy popped the top, looked at the clock on the wall, pointed the clicker, and switched to the college basketball game. Join us next time for the adventures of Troy the Town Cop, when we will find Troy being called to a high school kegger in the woods, and finding only a crashed 69 Chevrolet Lunar Lander and a lonely alien sitting on a stump singing, I am a lineman for the county, and drinking Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill.
This portion of our program is being provided to you by the good folks at The Next Big Thing. New apps for your phone. More stuff for you to do while you're doing that boring driving thing. Well, folks, hold on to your hats, because this new app is going to rock your world. It's the application that allows you to understand that some conspiracies are real. Download it today. Well, maybe tomorrow. We're working on it. Noted UFO scholar Richard Dolan says this about the next big thing. The moment of disclosure of UFOs is not the end of anything. It's the beginning of the real fight for truth. We saw demonstrations of a million people in Tahrir Square. Don't you think there might be a march of a million people on Area 51, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Los Alamos? Maybe. I'll bet you that Wackenhut security can stop a march of 100 people, but not a million. Not a million. Don't you think it just might happen? What about opening up a new truth movement? Because after UFOs and 9/11, JFK, underground bases, you name it, chemtrails, it's all going to be on the table. By God, what an exciting, challenging mess it's going to be. And so, in other words, the moment of disclosure is not going to be the end of anything. It's the beginning of the real fight for truth, not the end. And so the folks at the next big thing ask you to be careful what you hope for. Mm-hmm. What happens the day Barack Obama and George W. Bush and his father are walked out of the golf course in handcuffs, charged with prior knowledge and hiding information about a felony, the attacks of 9/11? And a bored U.S. Marshal puts his hand on George Sr.'s head so he doesn't bump it on the door. And we get the final public sneer of that career criminal. It appears on the front page of the New York Post and Time Magazine and Rolling Stone. What happens when the talk about UFOs and Bigfoot and the Wellstone murder are about details and where and when and how, rather than a rolling of the eyes? What happens when we have actual names and court cases, confessions, and Newsweek and Wall Street Journal and New York Times front page stories about the trial of some still living principals in the JFK, RFK, and Martin Luther King Jr. murders? Our whole world will be rocked. And somebody will need to make an app for that. In a darn big hurry, but thanks to the folks at the next big thing, it's all already in the works, guys. Things will be different. Our whole perception of life and what we should be doing in life may change forever. Might be scary, but it's where we need to go. Down the rabbit hole, folks. Step right up. Don't be shy. Okay, now, careful. One at a time, no pushing. Everybody will get their turn. Easy now. Careful. There you go. We're the next big thing. And we bring your world to your vehicle, your doorstep, and right up to your mind.
Chuck, should I go on?
No sign of him yet. Let's go.
Okay, we'll just keep going. And maybe we'll be able to talk to Jim Fetzer.
After the news. Who knows?
Yeah. We'll see, or maybe next month. Okay, here we go. It's been another long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. You out-of-town guys sure think you're real keen. Think all of us boys here are homespun and green. God damn it, you're all going to die. Oh, Lord, God damn it, you're all going to die. Lord, God damn it, you're all going to die. Ex and love song, Elton John, I remember. You remember, too, back in the day, as they say today. The winter of 71, the summer of 74, right in there somewhere. If you die today or tomorrow, if your life flashes before you as you choke on some Arby's or go flying off a bridge or jump, you will remember the round light flasher on the silver Christmas tree, watching that sucker go round and round for hours. You'll remember some other shit, and you'll remember songs and being out driving around in a special old car, road hunting and drinking on a beautiful fall day, and shooting aliens. Saucer, flying fucking aliens. What are they doing here if they are not from around here anyway? Maybe your buddy hit one. Then you don't remember anything but that after that. The last time, AC, Kenny, and Rick were out drinking and road hunting by Broken Bridge. Rick was sitting in the back seat, shooting out the front window where Kenny's ears were. He wanted to kill something, his way of grieving over his brother who had drowned in the new man-made lake in town a couple of days ago.
We headed on toward the bridge. It was dark by now. AC climbed up into his window and sat on the ledge, howling, screaming, shit like that. Stop, said Rick, I gotta piss. I pulled over, leaned forward for him to get out on my side. AC stayed in his window, howling. Woo-hoo! I'm woo! Rick pissed on my back tire. I could see him in my side mirror. Hey, what you looking at, homo? Woo woo! Rick quit pissing on the car. I snapped off the radio. AC jumped inside. Woo woo! The door opened. Rick pushed me up to where my nose smushed on the steering wheel and sat down, and he stuck his face up front. Woo woo! An answer for AC. We all opened our eyes wide to listen to this matter-of-fact statement from the dark trees. Kind of in your face, sort of. Like a tough guy standing outside the bowling alley on a Friday night, leaning against a dark blue Challenger, a cigarette in one hand, staring down all the jocks as they come out. Woo-hoo! A big white owl swooped right in front of us, turning its head, looking right at us, its eyes wide and unblinking, probably seeing the same by the dashboard lights, big eyes and mouths, white knuckles on the hard, shined dashboard. The owl swooped right straight up about three stories of an elevator shaft to sit on the telephone pole. We all sat back and breathed. This was a low growl, farther back from the woods. We sat up and jammed our fingertips into the black Chinese Chevy metal dashboard. Something came out from the woods. You look. You don't know if you're really seeing something. On our right, next to the river on the other side of the cut corn, a shadow, tall and straight. He walked right up to the bridge. Put on your lights, AC whispered. I'd shut them off for Rick to piss, and then he pissed on my car. Rick pulled away, disappeared into the darkness and back. I stared straight. Squeezed a big wheel with my right hand and reached for the knob with my left. Rick slammed three shells. You could hear the springs. I pulled. I punched the foot button for brake. We watched it, him, climb the bridge. By hands, by knees, just like in the old story. Up the side, like a PE rope to the ceiling. Across by two hands, scooch, grab with the knees, and then it was like he had just seen our lights and our car. He stood straight up, now with perfect balance, and he howled, "Oh!" He raised his hands over his head, shook them like a gorilla. My nose kissed the steering wheel as Rick pushed out. Phasers on full stun, he said.
I honked it and made the guy shake and holler even more. Rick waved his hand back at me to shut up. Let's go, said AC, even as he climbed back to sit into his window to get a better look. No, I said. I pulled the shifter toward me into first. AC jumped down, then right back up, popped the top on another, holding it toward the ditch to let the foam run out. The owl flopped and glided away. Rick stepped up into the light. With my toe, I punched the lights to bright. We all stared at the guy on the bridge. Like a skeet shooter, Rick put the 12-gauge to his shoulder and fired. Boom.
A flash filled the night. A lightsaber. The man threw up his arms again, trying to fly on his back. He fell into the dark. The boom echoed across the silent black chill. I punched the brights off. We stopped breathing. Rick's running steps crunched over the gravel. I smelled powder. I shot forward. My nose hit the wheel. The horn blared. God, said AC, grabbing my shoulder to throw me back. We sat in silence. The gunshot echoed around the world and came back. We breathed hard. We fought our hearts pound. We let them pound as much as they wanted. Well, I floored it. We skidded out. I hit it straight for the bridge. What are you doing?
Rick screamed and grabbed my shoulders. I headbutted him backwards because I was past sick of that shit. He flew back and we heard pissing and moaning in the back seat. Apparently he was bleeding. What are you doing? AC screamed. I didn't have time to explain that I couldn't see to turn around and we didn't want to get stuck in the ditch for when the policemen arrived. We didn't want to be heading back toward town to welcome the arriving policemen. The boards buckled as we rolled over the bridge. AC stared into the dark down over the side of the bridge at the moon sparkling in the river.
We rattled across, throwing up loose boards. I punched the lights off. We hurtled into the night like Apollo in dark space. Rick and AC had a fit. I lied. I told him I could see, barely, by the light of the moon. I told him we absolutely needed to run silent, deep, like a submarine without sound, into the darkest parts of the night we could find. Down, down, down. I had an idea and headed for Stone Road. I turned left and right again onto the less dark dirt road, more of a path. Up a hill, closer to an incline, the path went on about a mile, maybe less, on a steady rise. And I stopped at the top, next to the little cemetery.
I did a driver's ed three-point turnaround, and we sat there. The road or the land or the cemetery or something belonged to the family of a girl we knew from school. We often went drinking out here. You could sit up here and see the lights from a town and on the highway and the stars and the moon. Sometimes you would get to thinking about things and talking about things you didn't talk about in town. Deep thoughts. You would forget about them just as soon as you turn left off Stone Road toward town and start talking about tits and wieners and football like the hypnotist at the after-prom party had just snapped his fingers. And if a car turned onto the road way down there, you had a long time to get your pants on and climb into the front seat or throw the beer into the cemetery. But you could not escape. That's the thing. A few times policemen had caught kids up there. I suppose they knew about it and checked it out once in a while. It's a chance you took.
It was just a shot in the dark, said AC. We were sitting in the pitch black, the quiet, watching a few cars on the highway, probably, 5 miles away. Just a shotgun in pheasant season. Nobody's going to care. The cops aren't going to come, said Rick. He slapped my head pretty hard. I heard him snuffing up blood and snot, so I just rubbed it. They were right. We're in trouble, said AC. Well, that was also correct. You think, said Rick. Through our open windows, we smelled manure. We heard a semi blow its horn a long ways away. Shooting stars, said Rick. Why don't you shoot it, said AC. I waited for the fuck you, morphidite asshole bitch from the back seat black hole. A moo pierced the night. And we all jumped
Pasture gate creaked, and we looked for the cop lights at the bottom. "Who was it?" I said, probably not loud enough for anyone to hear. AC turned around. "Who was it?" he said. "Who did we kill?" "Me," I said. In the mirror, I saw Rick looking away out his window. The moon shined right on him. His eyes were wet-looking. "Alien," he said. "Right," I said. "What?" AC said. He jumped around to glare at Rick. "What? A Mexican?" I said. AC said, "Oh, shit." "A spaceman," said Rick, "you know." Put his fingers behind his head like my favorite Martian antennas and let them droop. "What?" I climbed around onto my knees. AC shoved Rick's shoulder hard. "What?" He shoved him again. "What?" Rick pushed AC with both hands. AC slammed his head back on the dashboard and started squealing, trying to reach his back with his hands. "Fuck off," said Rick. "A spaceman," I said. "How do you know? Are you sure? What did it look like?" "That's just what it looked like," said Rick. "It just seemed like that. I don't know." "Then why did you shoot it?" said AC. "You idiot." I shot a look at AC.
Rick slumped way down in his seat. He was crying hard now. "We need to go back there," I said, as I turned around to stare down the dark road. "You stupid shit," said AC. "Fucking asshole!" Rick kept crying. "We need to lose the gun," said AC. We sat still for a minute, staring. The lights of some tiny town were off to the right. I'd never noticed them before. I think the flashing lights off to the left were from the airport. Then there was the slow-moving traffic on the highway, all kind of like a moving painting of night. And in the foreground, well, if you all just gather around over here, we have the black and white 1957 Chevrolet with the boys inside who have just murdered an innocent alien being. Just behind them, we have the Stone Family Cemetery, dating back to 1859. Notice the big moon, the shadows of cows let loose in the cornfield after the harvest. The hint of understated, looming gloom, despair, and four lives ended abruptly. And fathers screaming, mothers crying, grandmothers punching stomachs with both hands.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average.
And that wraps up another New American Dream radio show. We thank you for joining us. If you were here to listen to Jim Fetzer, well, we were hoping for that too, and we're sorry that we missed him, but we'll definitely have him back next month. And who knows, maybe even sooner. We hope you'll join us again, same time, same place next week. We'd like to thank World News Trust for hosting our website and James Boomy of June2508.com for his generous donation to help us keep going. I'd like to thank Mike Palachek. Thank you and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
It's just a ride.
Oh.